to Native America Calling. From Studio 869 in Isleta Pueblo, I'm Tara Gatewood. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp says the time is past due for the federal government to fully fund its treaty and trust responsibilities. She demands Congress enact a $20 billion COVID-19 relief package for Native nations. Those are some of the highlights of the 2021 State of Indian Nations address. Today, we'll hear the full speech and the congressional response. That's coming up right after National Native News.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Deb Haaland vowed to work hard for everyone, lead the Interior Department ethically, and work with members of Congress, if confirmed as Secretary of the Interior. The New Mexico Congresswoman, whose Laguna and Jemez Pueblo, introduced herself in her native language, gave a land acknowledgement, and talked about her Pueblo roots as she testified Tuesday morning before the Senate Committee on Energy and Natural Resources, which is considering her nomination to be secretary. Haaland made history becoming one of the first Native American women elected to Congress, and if confirmed, would be the first Native American cabinet secretary.
This historic nature of my confirmation is not lost on me, but I will say it's not about me. Rather, I hope this nomination would be an inspiration for Americans moving forward together as one nation and creating opportunities for all of us.
Haaland talked about her struggles as a single mother relating to the Interior Department's plan to recover from the pandemic, manage and protect resources, and acknowledge both climate challenges and the oil and gas industry. Haaland has broad support from tribes, national Native organizations, and environmental groups, while she faces opposition from Republicans concerned about resource development. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp says tribal nations are strong. Sharp delivered the NCAI State of Indian Nations address virtually Monday. She talked about COVID-19 hitting Indian country hard, taking lives, impacting education, the economy, and now the need to recover.
Our resolve is being tested by dire crises across multiple fronts. But we are rising to the occasion, undaunted, drawing on the strength, fortitude, wisdom, and lived experience of our ancestors who overcame equally grave challenges in their time to prepare us to meet the challenges of our time. The truth is, we have been here many times before, and we have always persevered.
Sharp touched on climate change, racial justice, and the Native vote playing a role in the 2020 general election. She called on the federal government to keep its treaty and trust responsibilities and to strengthen relationships with tribes. Sharp says Indian country is encouraged by the Biden administration for nominating a Native American, Deb Haaland, for Interior Secretary, and President Biden's recent memorandum directing federal agencies to consult with tribes. The State of Indian Nations is delivered annually by NCAI's president as tribal leaders from across the country meet to lay out priorities for the year and form plans to work with the federal government, the White House, and Congress. A South Dakota House committee is passing a bill that seeks to close the gap when a missing Indigenous person is taken off the reservation. Tribes and the FBI are aware of the missing person, but the state can be left out of the loop. Democratic Representative Perry Poirier is Oglala Lakota. She wants to close the gap. The bill establishes the Office of Liaison for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Persons in the Attorney General's Office. That office would coordinate with the many governmental jurisdictions that exist in South Dakota.
When a child or a woman or any missing person crosses off of the reservation, we have a seamless operation, which happens in sometimes other crimes, like fugitives. But when it comes to missing and murdered Indigenous women and children, it's unseen and it's unheard.
Poirier says there are currently 77 missing Indigenous people from reservations in the state. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced by Kawanak Broadcast Corporation with funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.
Support by the Sanosky Chambers Law Firm, championing tribal sovereignty and defending Native American rights since 1976, with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska.
If you're a Native American expanding or starting a business, the Indian Loan Guarantee and Insurance Program supports your lender so your lender can make the business loan you need. Info by emailing dci@bia.gov. The Office of Indian Energy and Economic Development supports this program.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood, joining you live from my homelands of Shiriwit-Dui via Skype. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharp says the federal government is falling down on the job and it's long past time for the United States to do right by tribes. Sharp delivered the annual State of Indian Nations address Monday, her second since becoming president of the organization. We'll hear the entire speech in this hour and the congressional response from Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski. Sharp began by detailing the toll that COVID-19 pandemic has had on Native nations, and she asked for a moment of silence to honor the memory of those lost to the disease and to pray for full recovery of those still ill. And we now join the address from that point.
Following the emergency regulations that my tribal nation, the Quinault Nation, has put in place to stop this devastating virus from spreading, I share Indian Country's message with you today from my people's sacred ancestral homeland along the pristine shores of the Pacific Ocean. We welcome you virtually to the Quinault Indian Nation. So why do we share this message and who is it for? We gather in this way each year to assess and advance the government-to-government relationship between tribal nations and the United States, to share our perspective on the health of that relationship, and to discuss how it can and must be strengthened by working together as full, equal, and abiding partners. To that end, this address speaks to our federal counterparts, those who hold elected office, but also those political and judicial appointees and agency staff whose decisions and work directly impact tribal sovereignty, for better or worse. It also speaks to Indian Country, conveying to tribal leaders, citizens, and employees that we hear and we are fighting for your collective needs and aspirations for strong tribal communities and brighter tribal futures. Finally, it addresses our fellow Americans who are looking to tribal nations for guidance and solutions in the face of what President Biden recently described as the cascading crises of our times, from the COVID-19 pandemic to climate change to racial justice. So why is it the National Congress of American Indians delivers this address? 77 years ago, visionary tribal leaders from across Indian Country gathered in Denver, Colorado to form NCAI, recognizing that a unified voice, common purpose, and collective action was the only pathway to protecting and enhancing sovereignty and self-governance for all tribal nations for generations to come. As Ben Dwight, chief of the Choctaw Nation of Oklahoma and NCAI co-founder, explained, we must come together to, quote, express ourselves and take such actions as the hearts and minds of the Indian citizenship of the United States demand, end quote. In the 8 decades since, tribal leaders have taken great care to grow NCAI into the premier national organization serving and advancing Indian Country's greatest priorities. From stopping termination and relocation in its tracks, to launching the federal policy era of Indian self-determination, to spearheading tribal nations' historic inclusion in the CARES Act funding, NCAI is a lasting testament to the fact that tribal nations have long known how to govern and govern together Its prevailing strength flows from the counsel and toil of generations of brilliant leaders who knew and know how to stand and act as one in our government-to-government relationship with the United States. Simply put, NCAI speaks our shared native truth to American power and the American people. In that spirit, I stand before you to proclaim the state of Indian nations is standing strong. Our resolve is being tested by dire crises across multiple fronts, but we are rising to the occasion, undaunted, drawing on the strength, fortitude, wisdom, and lived experience of our ancestors who overcame equally grave challenges in their time to prepare us to meet the challenges of our time. The truth is, we have been here many times before, and we have always persevered. Exercising our inherent sovereign rights as governments, tribal nations are curtailing the spread and impacts of the virus, combating climate change, growing the movement for equity and justice, confronting continued threats to tribal jurisdiction and self-governance, and sparing no effort in holding the federal government accountable to its trust and treaty obligations to all of us. We have navigated through darkness and turmoil, helping not only Indian country, but the entire nation reach a new dawn. In the recent elections, a record number of Americans chose a new direction, one which champions equity, diversity, and inclusion, and which seeks to honor the unique political status of tribal nations, tribal citizens, and the extraordinary contributions we make to this country. Unprecedented turnout by Native voters made the pivotal difference across several swing states, affirming that Indian country is an undeniable and rising political force in our American democracy. We now greet a new administration, an altered Congress, who face a monumental task. America is at an inflection point with much to heal, repair, and recover from. If America is to vanquish this pandemic, if America is to neutralize those forces bent on destroying its democratic institutions, if it is truly to commit to forming a more perfect union, if it is to build back better, and if it is to do its part to save our planet for future generations, then it must come to terms with the right of tribal nations to chart their own course and their rightful place in helping this country meet these challenges and chart a vibrant future for all. And it must live on those terms. To do so, it must first acknowledge a fundamental truth, our shared native truth, namely that this nation was built and is sustained through the promises it made to tribal nations in exchange for millions of square miles of tribal land. These promises have no expiration date, requiring the United States to support tribal self-governance, education, healthcare, and other key services forever. The United States must then reconcile with its utter failure to meet its end of this grand bargain with tribal nations, such as the chronic underfunding of its trust and treaty obligations, continued interference with tribal jurisdiction, making decisions that impact tribal lands and communities without first securing tribal consent. And the list sadly goes on and on. The famed poet Maya Angelou once wrote, "History, despite its retching pain, cannot be unlived, but if faced with courage, need not be lived again." If the United States is truly committed to embracing our shared future with courage, it must formally acknowledge and reckon with the retching pain its failures continue to cause our tribal nations and communities. It must use the lessons it learns from this process to create an altogether different story with Indian country. One that affirms through its own laws, policies, regulations, and governance the inherent rights of tribal nations to control their own lands, affairs, and destinies, and one that supports and enhances in every conceivable way the full and free expression of tribal sovereignty by tribal governments, one which we have proven time and time again benefits not just Indian country, but our neighbors and the nation as a whole. So how do we get there from here? How does the United States help us forge this courageous future by reckoning with its past and heeding the express priorities of tribal nations today? Indian country is encouraged by several actions already taken by the new administration. For example, the president's historic nomination of Congresswoman Deb Haaland is the first ever Native person to lead the Department of Interior, which more profoundly impacts the daily lives of Native people than any other federal agency. A citizen of the Pueblo of Laguna and a 35th generation New Mexican, she possesses a centuries-old connection to and reverence for the beautiful and sacred landscape of this country, which the Creator gifted to our ancestors when time began. Her distinguished record of public service demonstrates that she is immensely qualified to steward our nation's lands and resources in ways that sustain all communities, economies, and cultures. Deb Haaland also understands to her core what supporting tribal sovereignty means in practice and how that requires a complete transformation of the department so that it defers and not dictates to tribal nations. She understands us and our needs because she is one of us. She understands our shared Native truth because she has lived it. We call upon Congress to confirm Deb Haaland without delay.
And we are listening to NCAI President Fawn Sharpe's State of Indian Nations address. And you just heard her say America is at an inflection point with much to heal, repair, and recover from. Sharpe points to the nomination of Representative Deborah Haaland to head the Department of the Interior as a positive signal for things going forward. We'll hear the rest of President Sharpe's address coming up after the break, but we appreciate you tuning in today. If you've had any thoughts, you can always email us, comments@nativeamericacalling.com, and you can even tweet those thoughts to us as well. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Again, we will pick up where we left off coming up after the break, but really appreciate you tuning in today to hear the State of Indian Nations address. And we also look forward to your reflections as well. Again, you can always send us an email. Hang tight, there is more ahead. Even As We Breathe is a fictional story by Cherokee author Annette Sanuk Clapsaddle. It invites readers back to 1942 and Grove Park Inn in North Carolina, where so-called foreign diplomats and the military mix with locals, including members of the Cherokee Nation. We'll dive into this dynamic story on the next Native America Calling.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, Strong Hearts Native Helpline is a no-charge, 24/7, confidential and anonymous domestic, dating, and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the Chat Now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This program is supported by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
You're tuned in to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo. We're listening to the State of Indian Nations address today. National Congress of American Indians President Fawn Sharpe from the Quinault Nation delivered the speech Monday. In the first part of her speech, she referenced COVID-19 as saying it's taken the lives of far too many Native people. And she says the resolve of Native nations and individuals is being tested by what she calls a dire crisis across multiple fronts. But the state of those nations is standing strong. We pick up as Sharpe was talking about some early actions by the Biden administration that she called encouraging.
Also encouraging is the president's recent memorandum on tribal consultation, which reaffirms the federal government's trust and treaty obligations to tribal nations, and mandates that federal agencies work with us to develop and implement tribal consultation action plans that fulfill those obligations. Equally critical are President Biden's executive orders and actions, rejoining the Paris Climate Agreement, revoking the Keystone XL pipeline permit, suspending drilling in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge, reinvesting the last president's unlawful downsizing of the national monuments at Bear's Ear and Grand Staircase Escalante, and waiving the non-federal cost share of FEMA COVID-19 disaster resources. NCAI's membership passed consensus-based resolutions demanding these steps, and we applaud the president for answering Indian Country's call. These steps, while significant, must be the first steps in an ongoing and deliberate bilateral process. There is much hard work the federal government must do and much that it needs to undo if it is to help tribal nations create the courageous future we seek. There is no time to waste. First and foremost, that hard work requires committing to a true government-to-government relationship between tribal nations and the United States. We demand and deserve a standard in which we come together as equal governmental partners, working hand in hand to develop the laws and policies that advance the federal government's trust and treaty obligations, or otherwise impact tribal nations and their citizens. To do this, the federal government must give the presidential memorandum on consultation some real permanent teeth by codifying in its guidance to federal agencies the principle of free, prior, and informed consent. In other words, when the United States government is considering an action that will impact tribal communities, lands, resources, and sacred places, it must first secure our permission based on our decision-making process, our timeline, and all the relevant facts before it is allowed to proceed. From Oak Flat to the Dakota Access Pipeline, we have the right as sovereign nations to say yes or no, and that right must be respected. The administration also needs to stop federal agencies from using the Federal Advisory Committee Act or the rulemaking process as a blanket excuse to avoid tribal consultation. Lastly, the administration and Congress need to make this new tribal consultation standard legally enforceable. NCAI has been advocating for this standard since our founders first convened in 1944, and we renew this demand here today. The federal government should follow the lead of the state of Washington, which has adopted a policy of free, prior, and informed consent with tribal nations. It is long past time that federal consultation with tribal nations puts tribal interests first, and not corporate or bureaucratic ones. Forging the courageous future we seek also requires federal government to fully fund its trust and treaty obligations to tribal nations, not just during this administration and Congress, but always. As the 2018 Broken Promises Report illustrated, chronic underfunding and poor structuring of federal programs designed to support the well-being of Native people, coupled with the unequal treatment of tribal governments, has predictably led to appalling disparities for tribal communities across the entire socioeconomic spectrum, from health to education, to housing, to public safety, to joblessness and poverty. This is a national disgrace for a country that prides itself on staying true to its word. And it needs to be rectified now, not through significant and sustained funding increases, but making those dollars non-discretionary and distributing them to tribal nations in advance. Indian Country should no longer have to suffer the consequences because Congress can't get the country's financial house in order. Forging the courageous future we seek also requires a swift and comprehensive approach to COVID-19 relief and recovery. Every single exhausting day, tribal nations are demonstrating we know best how to care for our own people. From vaccinating our native language speakers and elders first, to providing nourishment to food insecure Native families who have lost jobs and income, to erecting checkpoints at reservation boundaries and providing non-congregate sheltering to stem the virus's spread. We are fighting an unrelenting battle against this horrible virus, but we need the federal government to do its part so we can protect our people, provide ongoing relief to affected tribal citizens, and implement self-determined strategies that help our tribal governments, economies, and communities recover. Notable among our many COVID-19-based requests, NCAI and our partners are seeking $20 billion in additional direct federal relief for tribal governments, as well as maximum flexibility in spending rules and timeframes for how and when we can use new and existing funds. We also need much greater say and transparency in the formulas for funding distribution. Tribal nations should also be able to obtain COVID-19 vaccine supply from both the Indian Health Service and the states, not one or the other. We need a single federal office and point of contact to provide vaccine technical assistance. In addition, we need the necessary healthcare infrastructure, such as adequate staff, supplies, necessary storage capabilities, and culturally appropriate resources for patient education to broadly administer the vaccine in a timely fashion. Tribal nations also need capacity building funds, a voice at the table, and timely access to emergency management resources from FEMA when our people need them the most. The federal government simply must do better. The lives of our people and the future of nations are at stake. Forging the courageous future we seek also demands the federal government build on Indian Country's landmark victory in the McGirt case to protect and restore tribal homelands. This includes finally passing a Clean Car Cherry fix in Congress, which will affirm the right of all federally recognized tribal nations to take land into trust, reviving the successful Cobell land buyback program to allow more tribal nations to participate, reinstating the M opinions from the Obama administration to enable federally recognized tribal nations in Alaska to take land into trust, to protect the lands of the Mashpee Wampanoag tribe and other tribal nations impacted by Karcheri, and confirm the Mandan, Hidatsa, and Arikara nation that it's the rightful owner of the Missouri Riverbed. It also includes fully implementing the Indian Trust Asset Reform Act, including the appointment of an Undersecretary of Indian Affairs at Interior, and approval of comprehensive Indian trust asset management plans that tribal nations develop, and joining with tribal nations to defend their lands and resources in the courts from attack by state and local governments and private interests. We need to know that the federal government has our back. Forging the courageous future we seek also requires a healthy planet. But the rapidly accelerating impacts of climate change are doing incredible harm to Mother Earth, causing a great imbalance that threatens the continued existence of human beings and all other living things. These impacts cut especially deep across Indian Country, displacing our communities, transforming our sacred sites, and disrupting our subsistence lifeways. As place-based peoples, tribal nations have long understood Mother Earth's delicate life-sustaining balance and the sacred responsibility we have to nourish her as she nourishes us. Across this country, we are taking bold strategic action, implementing climate adaptation, mitigation, and resilience solutions that other governments around the world can use as templates for effective action. Unfortunately, the past 4 years, the United States has been derelict in its own duty to act. Rejoining the Paris Agreement marks a welcome reversal of that course, a course that needs to center the role, input, and expertise of tribal nations in America's domestic and international climate action effort. This must include the participation of tribal nations and leaders in international and interstate climate-related negotiations and advisory councils. Tribal nations' inclusion in congressional and executive branch climate planning and interagency working groups. Equity in funding for climate action by including tribal governments when federal assistance is provided to state and local governments. Increased multi-year and standalone funding for tribal climate action programs and initiatives. And a significant investment by the United States to support displaced tribal communities and repair tribal places damaged by climate change and environmental degradation. Finally, forging the courageous future tribal nations seek requires a genuine commitment to justice and equity. America's greatest strength is its diversity. Yet Native people still confront structural racism and discrimination in all aspects of their daily lives, from the classroom to the ball field to the ballot box. Creating a truly just and equitable society starts with education. All Americans need to be taught from a young age who tribal nations and peoples are today, how we have persevered in the faces of policies designed to extinguish or assimilate us, and why they have a civic responsibility as Americans to respect and uphold the inherent sovereign right of tribal nations to live as our Creator intended. To that end, we call on the federal government, state and local governments, school boards, and other key stakeholders to create, fund, and implement a comprehensive curriculum about tribal nations, tribal sovereignty, and the rich histories and contemporary lives of Native people. This curriculum should be designed by local tribal educational experts and provided to K through 12 schools across this country. We also call on them to help us finally retire those Indian school mascots that dehumanize us and foster a hostile learning environment for our youth. And when we join our racial justice and civil rights partners in calling for systemic policy changes at the federal, state, and local levels that foster equity and provide justice, from expanding voting rights to policing reforms to instituting measures to keep our students in school and out of prison. There are many other crucial steps on our collective horizon, such as tax reform, investing in Indian country's infrastructure, fully enforcing the Indian Child Welfare Act, and ending the epidemic of missing and murdered Indigenous women that the United States must take today and over the long run to do right by tribal nations and to support us in creating the courageous future we seek. Tribal governments caring for our lands and resources as we see fit. Robust tribal economies that provide opportunity for all tribal citizens. Strong Native families who are healthy and whole, safe, vibrant tribal communities, Native people speaking our Native languages and practicing our cultural life ways, highly educated, culturally enriched Native youth able to realize their full potential and prepared to lead our tribal nations to even greater heights. This is the courageous future tribal nations seek, and the one we have always worked for. We will forge ahead as we always have. We need the federal government to join us on that journey, not stand in our way, no more. In closing, I say to my fellow tribal leaders in all of Indian country, we face grave challenges, which we must join forces to overcome. But we also have before us tremendous opportunities, and together we must seize them. The sacrifices of our ancestors demand it. Our youth and future generations are counting on it. Remember, as those leaders who came before us understood all too well, divided we can be ignored, United, we will not be denied. United, we will create that courageous future we seek. This is our shared Native truth, and NCAI will continue to speak it to all who must listen. May the Creator continue to watch over all of you, our tribal leaders, and all Native people. Thank you. Seokwil.
And that was the full State of Indian Nations address delivered by NCAI President Fawn Sharp. And as you heard, she had a lot of things that point to issues that we are facing in our individual tribal nations, even the point of consultation and the importance of tribes' voice being woven into all of this. She also praised President Biden's actions, among other things, to rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement, revoke the Keystone XL pipeline permit, and his memorandum affirming the importance of consultation with tribes. And so if any of these points really struck you, you can always reach out to us. You can send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE, and you can also email us comments at nativeamericacalling.com or comment directly on our website. And hearing her words about the federal government and the need for them to fully fund its treaty and trust responsibility, where do you stand on that? All of these things could be great conversations that we could jump into on this program, and often we do. But there are definitely more things that we can point to. And we're going to go ahead in a moment after the break, hear the congressional response from Alaska Republican Representative Lisa Murkowski. So stay tuned for that as we continue our coverage on this year's State of Indian Nations Address. Hang tight. There's more ahead today here on Native America Calling. Thanks again for tuning in, and we look forward to more.
Did you know COVID financial relief in the form of forgivable PPP loans is available to small business owners and independent contractors, including artists? DreamSpring has worked with New Mexicans looking to open or expand their business for over 25 years, and now they're helping provide PPP loans. Information, including how to qualify, at dreamspring.org. That's dreamspring.org. DreamSpring supports this program.
Thanks for tuning in to Native America Calling today. I'm Tara Gatewood, and we're listening to the State of Indian Nations address from the National Congress of American Indians, and we just heard the full address from NCAI President Fawn Sharp. Now, we're going to hear the congressional response from Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski.
Anshuaki Yuhatbasak. My adopted Tlingit name is Anshuaki. I was humbled when Selena Everson from the Deshitan from Angoon, Alaska, invited me to be adopted into the Deshitan clan and honored me with the name Anshuaki. It is a precious gift, one that I treasure, which means Lady of the Land. I want to start by acknowledging the ancestral lands of the Anacostians and the nearby Piscataway and the Pamunkey peoples, where I am speaking to you from in Washington, D.C. It is an honor to be with you all today, even if virtually, and to provide the congressional response to the annual State of Indian Nations Address. This speech is an important event for sharing the story of Indian country. Now, this happens to be my third response to the State of Indian Nations. In fact, I was grateful to be able to provide the very first such congressional response back in 2008 with President Joe Garcia of Oke Awange. Then, 10 years ago in 2011, I was able to respond to President Jefferson Keel. I find it valuable and telling that working on tribal policy matters tends to be a bipartisan or nonpartisan effort. Even comparing this speech to the State of the Union address, you can see the difference where one half of Congress rises in applause and the other half stays sitting, depending on their party affiliation. But with tribal issues, it's a relief when we are not Republicans or Democrats or from one part of the country or another, but united to work together. We know that we don't always get there on every issue. We don't always agree, but it is always worth the effort. While we have many daunting challenges facing us all, from the pandemic, infrastructure needs, water, sanitation, and protecting Native women and children, it's also important that we note our progress. Just last year, two bipartisan bills, Savannah's Act and Not Invisible, were signed into law. And these measures were developed in direct response to listening to your stories and your lived experiences. Former Senator Heitkamp initially led this effort, and I was honored to pick up where she left off, along with Senator Cortez Masto. The stories that I've heard in Alaska are similar to the ones I've heard affecting so many Native families across Indian country. As we were working on this legislation, 52-year-old Veronica Abachuk, who was originally from the village of St. Michael's in Alaska, was reported missing. She was found dead months later. The same man accused of killing Veronica is also charged in the torture and murder of 30-year-old Kathleen Jo Henry. She was originally from the village of Eek. And what is just as shocking is that the Abachuk family had already experienced the loss of one of their sisters, Martha Toms, who was killed in 2005 and whose case is still unsolved. Unfortunately, too many missing or murdered Indigenous women have never received justice or resolution. I agree with what tribal leaders have said, that the MMIW crisis spans multiple policy domains, jurisdictions, and regions, and so the response must be multi-pronged. We also know that these issues affect Native men as well. While Savannah's Act and Not Invisible are necessary starts to address the issue, there are also larger and systemic changes to pursue. We should empower tribes to address risk factors to prevent victimization in the first place, such as multi-generational trauma, social and economic marginalization, and disconnection from community and culture. Tribal sovereignty and control are major pieces of the solution. I know Indian self-determination and self-governance works. It's a key piece to addressing multiple crises, from public safety to MMIW to healthcare. The Alaska Tribal Health System is an extraordinary example of this success. And one recent illustration is how Alaska has led the nation in per capita vaccination rates. And the reason why is a combination of the IHS allocations and the flexibility of our tribal health organizations to determine the eligibility for their communities. But most importantly, it's learning the lessons of the previous pandemics and working extremely hard to vaccinate all those in the communities. In the Northwest Arctic area of Alaska, for example, medical teams from Manilik have been traveling through sub-zero temperatures with very little daylight to deliver the vaccine throughout the surrounding 12 villages. And remember, there are no roads that connect in this region, and no roads to the villages either. Although once the Kotzebue Sound and Kobuk River freeze, a road is plowed on the ice to connect some of the villages. Now, Manilik is the regional nonprofit for these 12 federally recognized tribes. These medical teams are flying out on small bush planes. They're getting picked up by snow machines, and then they're pulled by sled to the homes of the elders where the shots are put in the arms. Across Indian country, tribes are achieving similar successes when the federal trust responsibility is met and the federal government supports tribal sovereignty. Meanwhile, I know that in Indian country, there's many obstacles that we face, and collectively, our nation, our many people, and Indian nations in particular have experienced tumultuous times over this past year. About 2 weeks ago, I was in touch with the tribal chief and tribal administrator of a small village in Southwest Alaska by the name of Tuluksak. I had learned that their washateria and their water treatment facility had burned to the ground. And this was the community's only source of clean running water. One third of that small community has contracted COVID so far. So this is a situation like many others where federal agencies, tribes, and state agencies have to work together to address a crisis like this. But it shines a major spotlight on the difficulty of telling your children to wash your hands, which we all know is the best defense against transmission of any disease. But when you can't do it, how do you prevent it? I know that there are dire infrastructure needs, water and sewer in particular, across Indian country. We have to work together to address this. I'm looking forward to serving as vice chairman of the Senate Indian Affairs Committee, this Congress, working alongside my friend, Senator Schatz, as chairman. Know that I am committed to working in a bipartisan manner in the Indian Affairs Committee to address the needs that tribal leaders share with us. So with that, we have about 20 native languages in Alaska, so I can't say thank you in all of them, but I will end with just a few. Kwiana, Gunoshchish, Awabase. Be well.
And that was Senator Lisa Murkowski giving the congressional response during this year's State of Indian Nations address. We now have time to hear a brief part of the question and answer session. You'll first hear the moderator ask the question, then hear the answers from NCAI President Sharp and Vice President Aaron Payment.
And the question is, in what ways do you see Indian country fitting into this administration's efforts towards achieving racial equity?
In our work here at NCAI, we are advancing the full spectrum of equity. We are advancing political equity for tribal nations, and that means we want to secure, at a minimum, in the consultation relationship, free, prior, and informed consent. No longer should be okay for another sovereign to take unilateral action affecting our land, territories, and resources. While we are advancing political equality for tribal nations, we are also advancing racial equity for the more than 5 million citizens, especially our young people that are facing systemic racism in the school, in the classroom, on the ball fields. And so we know that we have a lot of work, but we want to achieve the full spectrum of equality for all of our citizens.
Our next question comes from our viewers as well, and this one is, you mentioned the chronic underfunding of tribal programs. Do you expect that tribal funding will increase with the new administration?
Yes, absolutely. We expect not only an increase in appropriations at a congressional level, we also expect a plan to implement the recommendations of the Broken Promises report that our Vice President mentioned. We have a commitment from Senator Elizabeth Warren, Congresswoman Deb Haaland. This last Congress worked on a plan to strategically implement the recommendations coming out of the Broken Promises report. So we fully expect that not only do we have that opportunity at NCAI, we are also advancing to have someone at OMB. We've long advocated for an official at OMB because we make recommendations at an agency level, but once those decisions get to OMB, we don't have an effective way of advancing our priorities and policies. And so, yes, absolutely, we expect for all those reasons and many more that we'll continue to see increased funding.
Madam President, if I could add, full funding, advanced appropriations, and mandatory funding, so we're not subject to sequestration or government shutdowns. And we're hearing really good and promising comments out of the administration in support of all three of those.
Yes. Thank you, Vice.
Okay, the next question from our audience is, what can we do today to help make sure Deb Haaland is confirmed as Secretary of the Interior?
Yes, absolutely. That is another good question. We have information on our website, and It's important that everyone who is listening make the phone calls to key members of Congress in the Senate. We have a limited time right now, and there's been mounting opposition, but what you can do is contact your senator and make sure that they know and understand just how significant this appointment is, not only for Indian country, but for the entire country, because she possesses so much knowledge, wisdom, and commitment. She has a reverence for the federal landscape of which the Secretary of Interior is entrusted to steward. So call your senator. And Vice President, I know you have some ideas as well. Please step up here.
Absolutely. So we have worked as a strong team. Last fall, NCI passed a resolution in support of our first Indigenous cabinet member. And we're lucky we do have a nominee. And so this is the only nominee at that level. So this is it. We're about ready to make history. And so one of the counter arguments to some of the really paternalistic and I would say even racist sort of critiques that are coming is that she's not qualified. Now, anybody who is administered in the tribal nations level knows the breadth and volume of what we have to do at the tribal level. We are experts in a lot of areas, and she's done that. And she's ushered in just her one term in Congress, the ability to reach across the aisle to get consensus and to push legislation. The CARES Act, $20 billion, originally was $20 billion, but they pared it down to $8 billion. She wrote that portion of the CARES Act. And so she is extremely well qualified.
And there you have it, some of what went down this year's State of Indian Nations address. And those questions came from people who were viewing. And so there was a lot to discuss. And as you hear, there was also a lot of focus on the confirmation of Deb Haaland to head up the Department of the Interior. That hearing started this morning, and it'll pick back up again tomorrow morning. And so just thinking about this view into the state of our Native nations, I think is a really good point to think of what we have coming up this year, and also thinking about a new administration. And as we heard from President Sharp, also taking a look at huge issues that affect our Native nation, including missing and murdered Indigenous women, children, and people, taking a priority and wondering what will be done with this too. We also heard that from Representative Murkowski. Another big point, capacity building, so that tribes have the resources they need. And what were your thoughts when you heard talk about land into trust, and even thinking about how Cobell went down? There's a lot to think of, and there's a lot to consider. Following all of this, there was a press conference where President Sharp also answered a question I tossed to her about the state of our Native youth and also the threat of suicide, and heard a little bit from both her and Vice President Payment talking about the task force and things that NCAI is doing to keep this front and center, and also thinking about education and the opportunities that our youth are having, and maybe things that they're challenged with because of the pandemic. And so there is a lot to think about, also a lot to learn about our tribal nations as they specifically face a lot of these issues. And if there are certain issues that you are facing in your nation that you just want to tell us about, that, you know, we talk about many things on this program and are always looking for your input too, you can always reach out to us. You can find us at NativeAmericaCalling.com. You can even email me, tgatewood@NativeAmericaCalling.com. And that's going to wrap it up for our program today. If you missed anything in the hour, you can find this in our archives, and you can even go back and listen to past States of the Indian Nation address. Just look it up on our website. Tomorrow, we hope you'll join us as we jump into our February Book of the Month. We are going to hear from author Annette Sanuk Clapsaddle about her book, Even As We Breathe. She'll take us to the Cherokee Nation for a story and follow one of her fictitious characters. And maybe it might even remind you of your own home. Thanks again for tuning in today here on Native America Calling. And again, that invitation is to you. If you'd like to reach out, you can always find us on our website, NativeAmericaCalling.com. You can also find us on Twitter, too. Our Twitter handle is at 1-800-99-NATIVE. Thanks again, and we hope you'll tune in tomorrow, the rest of the week, and always, thanks again. We'll meet you here tomorrow.
Native America Calling is supported by Oregon State University eCampus. The strength that comes from your tribal community can make all the difference in reaching your goals. Oregon State eCampus is committed to providing another source of strength with a supportive educational community that respects your culture. Earn your degree online, but not on your own. Visit ecampus.oregonstate.edu/Native America Calling.
Jessa jata lok testi hi a ju de ti sate ita te ke se sti jata to i to hi ke sa na i ka u ta ke ti je ha ku wa hi ta sti ta la no ha ta ni ya wi ya u ye la ni ta na te ke an access ti ski na ski i ke ste la at healthcare.gov ala 1-800-318-2596 hi a ke cha no sa medicare hale medicaid una ta ska i
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davis. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.